Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
NFL fans, hungry for a big win this week? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, has you covered. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game, and if they do, you win $200 in free bets. That's right, winner, winner, chicken dinner. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code THPN. Bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game and win $200 in free bets. If they win, you win with promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older. New Jersey, Indiana, and Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and a $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Want to go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 153 of the big show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Hump Day Wednesday. Almost there, folks. A couple more days. But it gets scary. We got Halloween coming up. It's going to be a scary edition on Sunday's episode, let me tell you. But I have a scary individual today. She's a nice guy, but he was scary on the ice. Returning guest, another in this series of five toughest opponents, returning guest, Marco Cefalo. And Marco is great. And if anybody's interested, I highly recommend to go back and check out my full-length interview with Marco. I believe it's episode 86 in the back catalog. While you're back there, plenty of, like I said, episode 153, you got lots to choose from. John Morasti, Steve McIntyre, Joey Tedarenko, Clark Wilm, Roman Volpat, Josh Mazur, on and on. lots of great guests that I've had over the last 2 years, and Marco was one of them. But it's fun, and that's been I've said this before, and I mean I know I'm whatever, but chewing my food twice here, but I really enjoy the fun part for the five toughest opponents is just to reconnect with the guys. I mean, obviously you guys hear the finished product of the interview, but, you know, the fun part is, the pre-interview, talk and sometimes the post-interview talk. In fact, with Tedarenko, I think we talked for like another hour after his interview of like 2.5 hours, you know, but, a lot of the guys just, and then, initially on their first interviews, a lot of times that's the first time I've ever spoke to them verbally. So it's kind of the get to know, how's it going? And this is what we're doing and blah, blah, blah. And then, and then after the show, we kind of talk for a little bit, but, then when you have them back on for the five toughest, it's, I don't want to say now you know them because you don't, but I mean, but there's a familiarity there. And, and like I said, I have more fun in that portion of the conversation. It's all cool, but just that personal interaction and it's been fun. And so like I said, that's why I'm really enjoying this five toughest opponent series. I have another series that I'd like to try out, kind of a timeline thing. I'm kind of just spitballing it right now, like I said, with everything going on, of course, with the condo sale and all that. You know, November is going to be gong show, like moving and everything will be busy and unhooking and you know, we're moving. And of course you got to get the cable and the internet and all that transferred over, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know how many, episodes I'll be putting out in November. We'll put it that way. But, what was the point of what? Oh, but, once it gets settled and everything into December and, get rolling and everything can settle down and unpack everything and work will slow down because of the snow in the winter. I'll definitely focus. I can focus on the podcast and the YouTube channel more. And there's a few things that I'd like to do going forward that I haven't had an opportunity to with work all summer and the moving and blah, blah, blah. So, but it's sort of like I'm kind of in the initial stage, like a kind of a time capsule type series. And I basically just take like a year out of a season. And okay, say it's 1995-96 Western Hockey League. And I'd like to get a player that played at that in that, you know, like a Mike Haley or a Graf or whatever. And we just basically talk about the season. Not just the Spokane Chiefs season or whatever team they happen to be on, but just around the league, like who was the good teams, the star players, and who the tough guys were. I mean, obviously it's a fight podcast. So I mean, I'm never going to lose sight of that. So, but at the same time, we'll talk about, you know, like, oh, like in, say it was an 89-90, oh, Peter Nedved defected and played for Seattle and scored 65 goals. What was it like to play against them? And that type of thing. And then of course, then you'll have like, you know, they also had, you know, whoever, right? Paul Ferrone, what was it like to fight him or play against him? Just shit like that. I mean, and you can kind of do that way. I can kind of not only just with players, but I can get fans as well that happen to be around at that time. And, you know, like Jay out in Iowa being a big Quad City fan, like, you know, what big year for him was there. And then we can talk about all the guys coming. You get a fan perspective of it and that type of thing. It just sort of opens it up because at the end of the day, it's just anytime you open up your guest pool to more, it becomes easier to do a show. Like I said, with Marco here, I'm not making it sound like, oh, he was just my last ditch effort to get someone, or I was going to have him on again anyway. But, I had a guest lined up on Sunday and he no showed on a day and a time he picked, and I texted him and got no replies and whatever, you know? So of course, now it's Monday, Tuesday, like today I'm recording this obviously Tuesday night. So it comes out Wednesday right in the morning. So that left me basically 2 days to find someone. And Marco was nice enough to make time in his schedule. In fact, he showed up early and we recorded. So, but it's harder and harder to get guests but when you can open it up to the fans as well, you know, like I can't phone up Jay and ask who his five toughest opponents were, right? So it's that's a limiting type series because you need the players for that. But when it's a time capsule piece, I think you can include fans as well that were like maybe season ticket holders at that time or what have you. So, you know, I think, I you know, maybe, and if I put it out and the downloads suck and no one's, you know, whatever, then, you know, it's not like I'm married to the project, but it's just something I'm trying out. I think it's something different. And maybe that could replace the Sunday episode. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just something different. And we'll see going forward. But anyway, that's one of my ideas. You know, hopefully HockeyFights.com didn't hear that, or John Scott will be coming out with a time capsule piece for his next shows. So, sad but true. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see going forward what happens. But how about we get into this? Well, before I do that, obviously, I have to talk about, you know, I'm a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. There's over 50 shows in the network. Whatever team you're a fan of, there is a show for you. Of course, all the NHL team shows are busy with the season and everything. So, you know, I'm sure the Leaf podcasts are about where they're blowing stuff up, I'm sure. So definitely check that out. But also, for my off-network friends, we got part-time Ole down there in the swamp in Florida. Finally decided to release something I noticed today. So I downloaded, haven't had a chance to listen to it. I'm going to listen to it in the truck tomorrow. I actually phoned in sick today. I'm not even sad. I'm not even upset about that. I in no way feel bad about that. But took today off and, just kind of whatever. It was good. I enjoyed it. But I will listen to Alex's show tomorrow. But he explained, I bust his balls and stuff, but he explains what's going on. So, but I know he went to his first ever Blades game. He's a season ticket holder there, really trying to fit into the community. Oh, apparently he had people coming up to him saying they don't recognize him, and he's a real fucking, he's a minor celebrity down there. Yeah, like I said, well, it's good that these people come out of the woodwork so we can all identify who the crazies are anyway. So, you know, that mud show, and anybody that listens to that mud show, or would admit in person to doing it, yeah, watch out for those people, let me tell you. So, but yeah, he's back at it. Actually, check out his back catalog. I'll give part-time Ole credit. His back catalog is tremendous. With by Lois, Yablonsky, Rob Ray, on, does a great job. And on all seriousness, I think actually that, as much as it pains me to see him tailgating at the Everglades game and fight right off the draw and all that stuff, I was actually kind of jealous. I'd like to actually, you know, in the nice weather down there, and yeah, if I was down there, you might actually be able to talk me into going to one of those. But tailgating at a minor league hockey game, hey, I'm down for it. You know, it probably wasn't even tailgating. I'm sure it was just numbnuts sitting out in the parking lot drinking. It's lying in the back of his truck. He calls that tailgating, but, you know, whatever. But check out his show, Five for Fighting. Also, if you happen to be on Facebook, Alec has started, well, he started a while ago, but he started the group, the Enforcer Appreciation Facebook group. There's over 13,000 members. Check it out. Sign up, videos, pictures, discussions of same. And it's as close as you're going to get to the old message board days these days. So definitely give it a look-see. My other esteemed colleagues, you know, that's a bit of a stretch. But another gentleman that's involved in the old Fight Podcast game, of course, you guys know him as the Prince of Long Island, Jolton Joe Lazito. Give me the Lazito. It is a New York Islander, Coliseum Chronicles. It's a New York Islanders-based podcast. And Joe has done tremendous work. Fakoda, Asham, Strudwick, Bolton, they're all parts of his back catalog. And he keeps rolling along. Might be a little bumpy these days. Joe was on furlough, so of course he had all the time in the world to do this show. Now he's back to work. He's got his, like I said, he's got his Tchaikovsky lunchbox ready to go. But here, while we're sitting here, just between you and I, don't spread this around. But Joe's working out of Madison Square Gardens. You know what that means? I think the Islander fans would not be very happy hearing that Joe's in enemy. He's right in headquarters, enemy headquarters. I don't want to say he's going Broadway blue, but I'm just saying. Keep an eye out, folks. Keep an eye out. I'm just saying, if there's all of a sudden he's releasing an Alf Dahlin interview, some questions should be asked. So, but in the meantime, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, well, and he might have got sent there because, I mean, after being furloughed for 14 months, the third day he was in, he was filling out, putting in a vacation request. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But in the meantime, if you're interested, you know, and you're heading to the Long Island area, if you want doors to open for you, I'm not saying they might be back doors, but doors opening nonetheless, check out Joe Lozito's Coliseum Chronicles merchandise. You know, yoga pants, crop tops, you know, shirts, what have you, pens, mugs, Christmas balls. If you want to hold Joe's balls, his face will be on them. And, yeah, check it all out. Merchandise, Coliseum Chronicles. I don't know. I might put on my investigative journalism hat, and I'll get to the bottom of this for my listeners, because it could be something's rotten in the state of New York. We're gonna get to the bottom of this. But like I said, I have heard that there was Lozito sightings at MSG. That's all I'm saying. I'm just reporting the news. I'm not making it. I'm reporting it. So take it. You know. We'll go from there. I'll leave it up to the listeners to decide. But I think someone needs to investigate this because something's not right. But anyway, check out Joe's show in the meantime. Like I said, tremendous back catalog. And good dude. You know, questionable taste, but good dude. All right, folks. Now that that's out of the way, you heard the draft kick. I've had this, a couple people have commented to me that they've over the last little while, and I got it again here with the DraftKings ad at the beginning of the show. You know, and you never had ads before, but folks, this is how we get paid. This is how I get paid. This is how this network gets paid. They're our sponsors. Also, if you're gambling on DraftKings, use the THPN promo. Seriously, use the promo code. It's like $100 free. Like, why wouldn't you do that? If you're going to check it, if you're going to gamble. I mean, that's a great deal in itself. But going forward, I mean, when you're on a network, when it was just fourthlinevoice.com, yes, you got my sweet-sounding voice all the time. But, you know, as a member of the network and with ads, like, hey, you're watching your favorite TV show, there's ads that come on, right? So that's how we pay for, that's how we keep the lights on here. And so, again, I apologize for the people out there that, you know, I don't want to hear ads. Well, you know, you're going to hear ads. I'm sorry. You know, I don't have 1,000 of them breaking up the show or anything. And believe me, and there's podcasts that I listen to. Like, I listen to the Jim Cornette show, and I think there's like 4 advertising spots in the middle of it. So I get it, believe me. But at the same time, well, I mean, I'm pretty sure Jim Cornette's got, like, in fact, I can guarantee he's got more money and way more listeners than I have. But yeah, so... unfortunately, guys, that is the reality of the podcasting on a network. And it's at the end of the day, it's a minute and a half at the start of the show, and then you get another hour of no ads. So, I mean, bear with me. Again, that's how I get paid. While I'm on the topic, please download this. Don't stream it. I mean, that sounds so bad, but I get paid. That's true. I'm not lying to you. I'm keeping it transparent with you guys. That's how I get paid, is by the download. And if you stream it, it doesn't count. So. I need your downloads, and also if you could rate and review my show on whatever platform you happen to be listening to it, that helps me out in the searches, and not just myself, guys, but for all the podcasts you guys listen to. As small-time creators and stuff, we need all the help from the listeners. We're listener-driven, so, and I appreciate everything you guys do, and the downloads every week, I appreciate it. The guys that, if you're gambling and you use the DraftKings code, the THPN, I greatly appreciate that as well. Like I said, we're just a small network. You know, we're not Barstool or anything or ESPN or TSN. So, you know, we're just, the small network, slugging it out here. So trying to make it, and it's tough. It's an uphill battle when you're the little guy. So, I've always said this is a listener driven show. So any help that you guys can give me is greatly appreciated. And like I said, it's just a small little click to download. That's all you have to do. Like, that's it. And you've done it. So, and that's all you need to do. And it'd be greatly appreciated. So, But enough of the charity. I won't bug you anymore for that. But how about we get into talking to Marco here? So, guys, like I said, definitely go back and check out episode 86, my full-length interview with Marco. And, again, I want to thank Marco Cefalo for coming on the show. He was a great guest. And again, hopefully I can come up with, like I said, another series or something to have him on. I always enjoy talking to him. He's a good dude. So hope you guys enjoy this. And, hey, I'll talk to you guys on Halloween Sunday. I will talk to you then. Thanks, everybody. All right, here we are on the phone. A returning guest. It's fall. I'm telling you, it's sweeps week. It must be. I'm getting bringing the heavy hitters back. None other than Marco Cefalo. Marco, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, buddy. How are you today?
Very good, thank you. Well, I said I like having the guys back here. It's a series I'm doing called Five Toughest Opponents, and had a few of the characters back on the show, and I asked you if you could do it, and you were just telling me you went above and beyond here. We got five junior guys and then five pro guys.
Yeah. I thought I wanted to give everybody their due, right? I feel like anybody that I'm mentioning is somebody that kind of stood out over the years, and you know, a few of these guys got the better of me pretty well, and I felt like it was only right that I mentioned some of these guys.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. Like, we were talking, I originally brought the concept to you. You were kind of like, you mean junior or you mean pro? And you kind of got me thinking. I mean, like, I guess at whatever time period, right? At whatever time you were at in your career, that was the toughest guy you had fought at that point, right? So,
And then there was just a certain level of, you know, when you're 17 to 20, how tough you think you are versus when you're, you know, 20 and above, how tough you are. And I just think there was different guys at different levels that, you know, when you're playing in the Western Hockey League and Saskatchewan Junior League, you're fighting mostly Western guys.
Yeah.
Then you hit the pro leagues and all of a sudden you're fighting guys that you don't even know the guy's name, but you know, he played in the AHL for 7 years and then he's playing in the Central League and he doesn't like you.
Yeah. Well, it's gone from you're fighting teenagers to now you're fighting men who are trying to feed their family. And it's
right.
Like, you know, and now
trying to get to that next level still.
Yeah. And they're still, and they're chasing it. Right. So it's like, yeah, at that point it's, and you're the stepping stone to get to that goal. So, sure. Yeah, it's serious now, you know, like, let's get into her here. I guess we'll start in junior. I mean, I don't know if you have them in like an order or whatever, but I guess we'll start at number five for your junior guys here.
Yeah, so at number five, I had none other than the Sasky boy, Josh Dobbin. I listed him down because Dobber actually probably handed me my first loss, and I think it was an exhibition game, and he was the king of Regina at the time. We were both 17. But he was the king of Regina. You know, he just kind of probably went through Pat's camp, and we were on to preseason, and we both hopped the boards, and we're out there, and we're lined up beside each other, and I know we're going to fight. He knows we're going to fight. Puck drops, and I mean, I thought we were going to square off, and he got the jump on me, and I mean, four or five good ones right to the face before I even got into the fight, and it didn't last much longer after that. Big black eye after the game, pretty pissed off. Never had another chance to fight him in that game, and kind of set up a rivalry for us throughout our junior career. I bet we fought another 10 times, I bet. But that was just the first one I had the list down there. I just thought, you know, good old Dobber, he handed me my ass that night.
Well, I mean, you know, tough guy, kind of a smaller kind of Ty Domi-ish guy for people out there wondering. But yeah, he had some in the WHL. He doesn't get talked about a lot, but he had some big wins in the dub against some big guys, some big name guys. Dobbin,
he fought everybody of that time frame and that era. Anybody came to town, he fought them. Even on the road, obviously, but he was kind of the king of Regina over there for a while, and I saw him hand a lot of people a loss.
Yep. Yep, no, tough dude for sure, absolutely. Well, here we go, we're off to a hot start, Dobbin, all right.
Number four, a guy you've had on the show before, Chris Graff. He was a guy that I probably, in my career, he probably taught me a good lesson to not underestimate the smaller guy, because I, you know, probably growing up as a kid, being a bigger guy all the time, you know, you never had to worry about the smaller guy. But Chris Graff was one of those guys that once we kind of got going, he got going and I didn't. And he kind of chucked me around a bit. He probably gave me a good little thumping that that he deserved to mention in here. Then at number three, I had Reed Lowe.
Well, there
and
you go.
Reeder was one of those guys that I knew I was getting ready to fight him. I knew he was the tough guy in Moose Jaw and kind of that division of the Western League at the time, and messed my finger up on him. Still messed up to this day, but just a super tough guy. He went on to have a unreal tough career in the NHL, a little bit in the AHL too. He was down and up, but he's a tough boy. Another Sasky boy right there.
Yeah, and he's a guy. Well, first I'll go back to Graffer. Yeah, Graff. There's another guy, much like Dobbin. He played the 3 years in the Western League, and then unfortunately with injuries and stuff, kind of played like the one half year there in Idaho and in Austin, and that was kind of about it. So I think he flies under a lot of people's radars, and especially for the American listeners out there that never got to see him, definitely check YouTube. Graf Graff. He has unreal fight. His fight card is unreal. Like, not only yourself, but I mean Scott Parker and stuff. And it's sort of his Western Hockey League claim to fame was him dropping Chara. He dropped Chara in Prince George, and that fight is on YouTube, and it's legit. He did do it. And Graffer, and I've been to his house. So I hung out there a couple years back, and like you said, smaller guy, unassuming. Like, 5'10", probably played at 180, and just like...
He would throw him, though.
Oh, yeah. He was unbelievable. He had and both hands, and he was a technician, and Graff was unreal. Yeah, he was... So it's been fun getting to know him over the years here, being on the show and being at his place and hanging out. And, Graff's a really good dude. I know he's listening. Graffer's a good dude. But, tough as shit. And he did that to a few guys for sure. And then Reed Lowe,
Once he got his name, though, guys kind of knew, right?
Exactly. Yeah. No. And then Reed Lowe. I mean, I don't have to tell people about Reed Lowe. They know that. But and Moose Jaw. Yeah, he had a couple back to back like 40 fight seasons coming out of the. Well, first he started in the SJA in Minot, and then came up to Moose Jaw in his hometown. Had a few big years there. And yeah, Reed was, and that's the other thing I was going to say to you, and I mean, we talked about it in your full-length interview, but just in here, especially in the 90s, it was tough, because there's no YouTube, there's no video, so it's not like you're doing any, you can go watch a couple of this guy's fights and get his tendencies, like you were going into this shit blind, other than maybe what a teammate told you. Oh, he's a lefty, oh, okay.
That's it. Then you see the guy in warm-up, and you're like, oh, shit, that's a lot of boy over there. Shit.
Yeah. That's actually interesting, because when I've talked to guys, it's kind of gone both ways. Okay, say you were playing and there was I guess when you were in Oklahoma, there was, YouTube still wasn't around when you were playing. But say their YouTube had been around.
I'm old.
Yeah, well, I know. I'm older than you. I know. But yeah, if you had access, say you had access to what the kids have now with the YouTube back when you were playing, would you have been a video guy, or do you think you would have psyched yourself out?
I want to say I would have been a video guy, because the curiosity would have got to me probably. I probably would have been like, no, you need to see what the hell's coming to town so you don't make a mistake.
Yeah.
But maybe not. Who knows? I don't know. When I was 17, there was a lot of other stuff on my mind than maybe thinking about who I was fighting the next night.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Because it's interesting, because as I've talked to guys, and it's like some of them were like huge into it, and then other guys were just like, I think it might have been Wade, actually. No, Wade was a video guy. I'm trying to think who it was. Somebody said they'd never watch video because they started to, and then they just completely psyched themselves out, so then they stopped. They didn't want to do it anymore. Yeah, I can't
remember. I'll tell you, over the years, number one on this list on both levels would probably be myself. I mean, I probably psyched myself out or up from fights and just, you know, thinking that this guy's coming to town and, man, he's going to be crazy tough. And then the fight would end and you'd be like, man, I wasn't that bad.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, so when you're sitting on that bus and you're taking the ride there, like, that's just got to be sitting on your mind the whole trip up. It's like, oh, I got...
Oh, yeah, you know
I got I got Dobbins sitting there waiting for me, right? Or I got Graf sitting there and, you know...
Exactly. Oh, guess we're going to Moose Jaw this week or going into Brandon and who was out there? Daniel Tetro and who else did they have out there at the time?
Well, it was like Van Owen and all those guys and, yeah... Staples.
Just somebody somewhere, you know, going into Swift Current, Derek Arbez. I don't know if you remember that guy.
Yeah. Did you fight Arbez?
I fought Arbez, I think, one time. I fought Jeremy Rondo a few times.
Yep.
I think I fought Arbez once, but they said, you know, he had this certain aura about him. Guys said he used to carry around a mannequin head on the bus with him, and I don't know if that was just like a rumor. You know, at the time, you don't know. Like, there was nothing to verify or you know, confirm or deny what was going on. Well, you hear this stuff and be like, man, that guy's a head case.
Those social media, and you know, which is probably a good thing back then, but you know, there's no Twitter or cell phones or any of that stuff. So yeah, the urban legends would go around.
Right.
You're saying he carried it. Before we get going here, a mannequin, what was the deal with the mannequin head? Like, was there a reason?
I don't know. It was something that I heard. I don't remember who said it, but they said that he used to roll around on the bus, like on his road trips. He'd take a mannequin head with him, and like that was his seatmate or whatever. Right. I don't know. That's just what I heard.
Tremendous. You know? I think he's on Facebook.
And then you hear other stuff, like, you know, Dale Purrington's got his name tattooed across his back. And then you see it's true, and you're like, well, fuck, Arbez must carry a mannequin head around with him then.
Yeah, Purrington and Fedoric both had tattoos across their back with their names, yeah. But, well, there you go, and mannequin head. Well, see, Arbez, I think, is on Facebook. I should get a hold of him. So ask him if his mannequin head stuff true. And I'll say, yeah, Cefalo's talking mad shit about you.
To it.
Yeah, I'll say, Cefalo's talking mad shit about you. What do you have to say? I'm going to start something here.
No. it's what I heard. I didn't start it.
There you go, Arbez. There's another name. Like, yeah, he had a big, he had a 40 fight year the one year in Swift Current, big name. But then, I don't want to say then that's it. But you know what I mean? It's like those junior guys. You know, they had their couple years of like 30, 40 fights back in the 90s, and then it's like, and then it's back to the farm, right? They don't play pro. They don't, you know, they don't go on. And it's just so people, they sort of those guys get lost. Or people don't know about them, like a Dobbin, or, well, I guess Dobbin played in the Quebec League a little bit too, but you know what I'm saying though? Like, they don't play in the East Coast or the American League or whatever for people to see them. It's just like these hometown junior tough guys, especially junior ASJ. Like, there's a few dudes going around the SJ that were like just killers, and then after that it's back to the family farm, and that's what they do. But so people don't know these guys. So yeah, when you throw out the names like the Arbez and the Dobbins and stuff like that, yeah, it's like, it's cool, man. People need to hear these names because there were some dudes back in the day.
look up some names. See if you can't find a few fights with them.
Exactly. So
at number two.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. I was going to say, yeah, where were we? Number two, yes.
Number two. So at number two, I got Steve Pete.
Yep.
I got Pete. I fought him when he was young. So I probably, like I said, I probably lucked out. I think I was 17, he was 16, or I was 18, he was 17, one or the other, but we were pretty young, and I think he was still just coming into his own, because he was real tough when I fought him.
Oh, but, fuck, that guy was 15 playing in the BC League, knocking people out in, like, Langley and shit. Pete was a killer, man.
Right.
Yeah, and the fight you're talking about, folks, is on my YouTube channel, Marco's Fight with Pete, behind the net there. That is a very good fight, but yeah, old Pete, man.
Yeah, he just couldn't hit him hard enough, I guess. Couldn't hit him hard enough.
Yeah, well,
I heard a lot of guys say that about him. You couldn't hit him hard enough.
Well, that was the thing. Like, even at 16, like, that was the big rumor where, like, he fought Rocky, right? At, like, 16 and, like, just stood there and took it and, like, threw it back. Like, you know, and that was, like, 16-year-old against, like, kind of the league champ at the time. It was like, Jesus. All right. You know? Yeah.
I think Rocky was pretty much the champ of the league.
Yeah.
I was just telling my wife about him the other day. She was asking me, you know, after you had talked to me, reached out to me. She said, who are you? What kind of guys are you talking about? And I just told her some of these guys, and I told her there was just one guy, though. He was the heavyweight champ, and he was the heavyweight champ for a reason, and he owned that title for a long time. There may be a couple guys that got the better of him here and there, but that guy fought, I don't know how many times Rocky fought every year in the Western League, probably 30, and I bet he maybe lost one a year.
Oh, yeah. You were in Medicine Hat with him. How'd you get along with him?
No, we were not in Medicine Hat together. So what happened is that the day that he got traded to Swift Current, I got traded to Medicine Hat.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So here I thought I'm going in. And by the way, Rocky's my number one for Junior.
Yeah.
Just since we're talking about the guy,
Yeah.
But that day that I got dealt, I was pretty devastated because I was having a good year in PA, and things were going well, and I had teams talking to me about the draft and stuff, and you know, nothing too hot and heavy, but I mean, when people are calling, you're getting pretty excited.
Yep.
And anyways, I get dealt the same that day, and I'm pretty devastated, but I'm like, well, shit, you know, worst case scenario, you're going over to Medicine Hat with Rocky, and you're going to be a pretty tough team. And that wasn't the case because Swift Current picked him up, and they were making a playoff run. So basically, I went in to where the heavyweight champ was fighting for years, and basically, you know, I got his billet. I was sleeping in his room, in his bed, you know. It felt weird.
Yeah, this isn't awkward. Yeah.
yeah, this, not only does this suck, but now this is awkward. Thanks a lot. But yeah, I had Rocky at number one in Rocky's fight. I talked about it on my podcast, that the first one with you was one of those deals where I tried to get the better of him in the first time, and I kind of jumped him, and he didn't drop his gear, and I got a 10-minute misconduct. And then in Medicine Hat the next time that we played them there, he kind of got the jump on me. But he gave it to me. He gave it to me. I was trying to get back into the fight, but they just seemed like every time I got a hold of his one arm, the other one was coming, and then I had to try to get that one under control, and then, oh shit, it's back to the right. And it was not my finest hour. It was not my finest hour. But I mean, you know, to lose to a guy like that, I mean, there's no shame in that. There's no shame in that kind of deal.
No, many did. Yeah, like you said, right? It wasn't like you weren't the first, that's for sure. Well, and he has such that, right. And it was with Rocky, it's such that awkward style, right? Like that, kind of like that chuck and duck style, and he can throw with both hands, but when he's chucking it, he gets a left coming. I mean, that's he looks really awkward. Like trying to fight him looks like it would be very awkward.
He's long, right? He's very long, and he's good at he's Golden Gloves boxer, so he's excellent with both hands. He's long, and he's elusive, and he's kind of crazy. He's wild, right? That's always a hard fight.
Yeah,
wild is always a hard fight. If a guy does the same thing every time, and you're able to get a hold of him, and he's trying to get position and stuff, but Rocky's just throwing, and he's throwing, and if you get a hold of him, he's throwing with the other hand, and he's spinning around, and he's ducking and weaving, and his hair's going everywhere, because, I mean, he's got that mop.
Yep.
And, but yeah, he was just a really tough dude, and, I mean, that translated into pro hockey for him, into the NHL. I mean, he beat up a lot of tough dudes in the NHL, so, and the AHL. I mean, you just had the Didn't you just have the tournament deal the other weeks back?
And yeah, yep.
He ended up finished second. Is that right?
Yeah, he lost to McIntyre in the final. Yeah,
I had him over Big Mac. That's just me, though.
Yeah, so did I. I could have voted. I probably would have voted that too. Yeah, I said I could see him picking Mac apart like he picked Grimson apart in Calgary that night. Yep.
Yeah, he's just wild, right? And that's a bad. I think that's a bad matchup for Mac because Mac would just like to kind of grab you and string you out with his power. Big country boy farmer, string you out and hit you with those fucking hammers.
Yep.
But anyways, that's where I finished up with Junior. I had Rocky at number one just because, I mean, and he just the aura the guy carried.
Yep.
For years. I mean, for years.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, it's interesting. Before we get to the pro, you've made mention of it, like, you know, kind of a quick start, or he got a quick start at you, or whatever. of course, back in the day, of course, when you were playing, it was always sort of the, especially the Western League, it was helmets off, right? Square off, the helmet off thing. That was big in the Western League. Did you prefer the big square off, or would you rather just like let's get at it right now? Were you a big square off guy, or did you just want to get in right away?
I think I did about half and half, and I think in honestly, I think it the getting right after it was always better. It just seemed like it was a more natural fit to the game. You know, the other part kind of felt like the show. It was all for show, and it was. I mean, obviously it was. I mean, look at what that era produced fights wise versus what you're seeing nowadays.
Yeah.
But I think that as far as what I preferred just getting after it.
Yeah.
And kind of spur of the moment, letting it take place. Even if you were lined up at the face off, I preferred just dropping them and getting after it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, that's a help. Well, we're off to a hot start. That was five. Tough dudes in junior, that's for sure. So now we got the pro side of things, and for the folks again listening out there, of course, Marco played 4 years with the Oklahoma City Blazers in the Central Hockey League, and then briefly 10 games in the craziness of the Quebec League with the Laval Chiefs. So we'll have at her here. What's your pro list here?
All right, so at number five, I got my first regular season pro fight. It was against a guy named Bob Westerby.
yep.
If you look up Bob's stats from that year in Memphis, he played nine games and he had 96 pims. And I believe Bob played in the AHL. I think he was an older guy when I came into the league. I think he may have been playing in the AHL, and then that dream was fizzling out for him, and he was down in the Central League doing this thing for a little while, I guess. I don't know how many years he played or what, but it was the one time I played against him, and it was my first pro game, and I had a couple of bad shifts, the two shifts before, and I'd come off the ice, and our coach at the time, Doug Sauter, he comes down, and you know, Doug was never shy about saying how he felt about the way you were playing. And he came down and he says, "Marco, somebody told me you're a tough guy, like to play the body." He starts walking away and he starts chuckling. He goes, "Somebody lied," just walked away. just ripping me, right? So now I'm pissed. Next shift, I'm going out there. I'm trying to fight. I go out there, and the first guy that comes near me, I chop him. And I cross-check him, and I don't even know who the guy is because, I mean, of course, I'm new to the league. We've never played this team. We didn't play him in exhibition. And, you know, I'm just getting going in my pro career. And the guy I'm chopping is, I think the guy's name was Derek Grant. It was their best player at the time. It was their number one guy. And all I felt was a guy grab my jersey from behind me and start punching me, and he's drilling me, and I spin him back around. I get back involved in the fight, and I actually kind of give it to him before the end of the fight's over. But Bob Westerby. And I think I've looked him up in the past, and I think he had quite a few pims in quite a few places.
Yes, he did. Well, Bob Westerby, for those wondering, he played on those amazing Kamloops Blazer teams that were winning Memorial Cups. He played for them for 3 years, and he was a Buffalo Sabres draft pick, so he played a year in Rochester. And then he was in the East Coast League for 5 years. But 300 minutes the 1 year, and then 200 minutes and 28 games in Memphis the 1 year. You definitely picked, you didn't pick a shrinking violet, that's sure, for sure, for your first pro tilt anyway. When you turned pro, did you go right to Oklahoma?
Yep, that was the first place I went. I had a lot of offers. My 20-year-old year of junior, I had a really good year, a lot of pims, a lot of points, and I had a lot of good offers. But the selling point was always for me. I mean, you got 10,000 fans in the building.
Yeah,
that's a big. I mean, when you're a young kid, you always dream about playing in front of fans, and you know, 10,000 fans a night, that'll get you going.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and of course, I mean, you know, you guys, of course, had no shortage of toughness, and of course with Sauter there was always a real heavy Western Canadian theme to the team. So you got
lots of Saskatchewan boys on the team.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, you and Brookbank and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, tough team. And like you said, weather's good, big crowds. Yeah. I mean, what more can you ask for out of minor league hockey? For sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's see. Number four, I had Johnny Hewitt.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Good old Johnny. One of the most willing guys ever to play the role. And just a tough, big, strong dude that I talked about the story with him on my podcast with you earlier on the previous show. But Johnny was talking shit to my brother in the summertime and told him he was coming down. He was playing for Wichita and he was going to be in the Central League and he was going to kick the shit out of me. So of course, that's just one of those things that it's a fight that's easy to get up for, you know. One of the things you should never do is give a fighter a reason to want to kick the shit out of you other than it's just his job. And it was more personal. So I felt like that was a good tilt too. I mean, he was coming in. He obviously knew he had ran his mouth and he knew it was going to get back to me. So he obviously knew I was ready, but, he didn't shy away from anything and we went toe to toe pretty solid, but I diced him up pretty hard. Gave me a big black eye at the time when I had hair. He pulled the shit out of my hair because he was losing. So he reached up and grabbed the shit out of my hair because I guess he was mad. You know, Johnny had a few screws loose, just naturally. He had no trouble, starting a shit show. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Of course, Hewitt would go on to, you know, the craziness of the Quebec League as well. So, which is probably, you know, he fit in very well. He wasn't so crazy anymore once he got to Quebec. That was just normal shit down there, you know. So
that was absolutely normal shit down there. That was, I mean, that was normal shit. Bench line brawls were normal shit down there. Fucking bench brawls were the abnorm, and that was probably one every five, six games. You know, it was a donkey show. I mean, it really was, but they knew their target audience, man. They knew who they were catering to, and it worked.
Yeah. Oh, the money
I'd love to see their books from those years.
Well, no one saw their books that year. That's why it worked so good.
It may be watered down now a little bit, but in those times, I mean, their books had to look great because they were packed houses every night. Those stadiums held, I'd say, 2,500, 3,000, 4,000 fans some places. And I mean, they'd pack them in there, wasted Frenchmen.
Yep.
Just waiting for the next fight. It was awesome.
Beer sales were brisk. And well, I mean, the Quebec team was playing at the Colisée. I mean, they had 10,000 people at those games. They were on TSN, like when the strike was on, or RDS, I guess, the French version. And, you know, it's like, shit. Oh, yeah, the money in that league was, oof. Flying around for sure for those mid-2000s. It was, that was unreal. Well, I was just saying, of course, I know you played briefly in Laval. Again, folks, this is Marco and I cover all this in his other interview, but for the sake of new listeners, we'll say, like when you went to Laval, you know, we won't get into the money or anything, but did you get paid everything you were promised?
Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely. I never had any problems on the financial end of things there. They might have been a little bit dishonest with you and told you some shit that they thought they needed you to hear to get you to come up there.
Yep.
But as far as I always got paid. It was never a financial issue.
At the end of that 2002-03, did you have any, was there ever any plan on like maybe going back to play with Laval? Or was it just like, no?
Never.
No, that was it.
Never. That was not. No, I wasn't. I had decided after I'd been there for 10 games that wasn't going to be how I was going to make my money.
Yeah.
It was a great experience, and I wouldn't change it for the world. And all the respect to the guys that decided that that's how they were going to make their money. Go ahead.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, that wasn't enough money for me to put myself in that kind of spot because I know that there's a lot of guys that that got really hurt from that league.
Yeah.
That we don't talk about. Now, granted, nobody's going into that league, or at least they're not playing five games in that league and not knowing what the hell's going on, because it doesn't take you very long, even if you're naive going into that situation, to see what's going on in that league. That's a league where you're expected to fight every time somebody says, let's go.
Yep. Yeah. Well,
and that's going to be every night.
Well, yeah, and you were paid as such, and if you weren't going to do it, especially back then, we'll get someone in here that will. And So it was. There was no. There certainly wasn't any sugarcoating what you were there to do, and it was made abundantly clear very quickly. Yeah.
That's right.
So we got Westerby, we got Hewitt, so it'd be number three.
Number three is going to be Ken Richardson.
Oh, there you go. A little dub guy. Yeah.
Tough guy, smaller guy, but tough, went toe-to-toe with him. Had a lot of respect for the guy, heard a lot about the guy, know he beat up a lot of people.
Yep.
Good guy. I think that was another one of those deals that Doug gave me a little pre-shift motivation, we'll call it. pre-shift motivation where he was having a night with me. He was all over me. I was hung over. He was up my ass. I think I was minus two that game. We were probably up 5-1 or 5-2 or something, but I was minus two, and he liked to play our third line against our top line. And every once in a while, you know, the top line guys would roast you in the neutral zone, and then Doug would roast you.
So this was his way of. So you figured I better fight Ken Richardson to get back in the get out of the doghouse.
But he was a motivational speaker. He was a motivational speaker.
There you go.
He was a motivational speaker. Yeah, he'd let you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Ken Richardson. Yeah, another former Red Deer Rebel and. Yeah, played seven seasons down there in the Central League in Huntsville and San Antonio and Corpus. And
good player, too. I mean, yeah. I could play the game. He was a good player.
Well, and was he – well, he was in Laval the same – was he there when you were there in Laval?
No, he left right before I got there, and I think he left for the exact same reason that I did.
Yeah.
Because they – you know, the money thing is what gets you to go.
Yep.
And then it's basically on you to decide if that much money is worth it for you to stay.
Yep.
So, or do I head back down south and get paid half that much to do? But it's not the same thing, right? It's a totally different animal.
Oh yeah,
the Quebec League's a totally different animal.
When you went to the Quebec League, were you? How was the, like, in terms of the, like, okay, the circus and the gong show and all that is, that's a whole other level that isn't, you know, anywhere near to any other league, especially at that time period. But when they had to actually play with the little black thing that was rolling around out there, how did you actually find the gameplay in terms of talent level?
The gameplay was probably East Coast League level. There was good players. There was players, a lot of guys that were there played in the East Coast League, and but every team always had their top two lines, and then you had the two lines we had three lines of freaking donkeys, and then we had donkeys waiting to get in the lineup that were fucking suspended.
It was always
a matter of who was next to step in the lineup, who was suspended, who wasn't suspended. I mean, it was insane.
Yeah, it's like the Lay's potato chips. Eat what you want, we'll make more. Yeah, that's kind of what Laval was, right? Like, you know.
That's right.
But I think a lot of times, like, people see the – people that don't know, they see the YouTube videos and they see the circus shit. And rightfully so, it has the image that it has because, okay. But I think you always hear the term, like, oh, it's a beer league. Oh, no, it's no beer league. Like, that was –
No.
And like you were saying, a lot of the French guys, for them, they left the East Coast, or if they were over in Europe, they came home. You know, because now they're back at home.
A lot of those talented guys have come back there because the tough guys weren't the only ones getting paid. I mean, we had guys that played in the NHL. I said in the podcast before, we had Bobby Dallas, played in the NHL. We had Mike Mongeau, he played in the NHL. I mean, there was NHL caliber guys that were playing there. They might have been at the twilight of their career, but a lot of guys that have played in the show could play in the East Coast League till they're 40 or 50.
Yeah. No, exactly.
So...
Yeah, so it's definitely, there's definitely this idea with some fight fans that it's like, oh, no, it's a beer league, and it's like, no, it's not.
No, not at all.
No, But the talent level was certainly there. But yeah, when it was time to, you know, when it was time to dance, it was, it was a whole different level. But, all right. Well, Kenny Richardson, there we go. That's a great name. There you go. Blast in the past. All right. Number, what are we at? Two? Number two.
Yeah, we're at two. We're at two. Number two, I got Kevin Popp.
Love it.
And the reason I got him, he's a tough guy. Tough guy. Big guy. Threw hammers. I mean, he punched me one time in the fight. The only reason I know that is because I watched it afterwards on video. Punched me one time. I was out on my feet. I continue to fight, break his nose, and kind of get him up against the wall. Refs break it up, but really good fight. The only time he clocked me, though, he put me out on my feet. I don't remember anything about the fight. The only reason I remember the fight is because I saw it. I saw it afterwards.
Yeah, old Pop, yeah, another Western League guy. Of course, he was out in Spokane and Seattle and in Portland. Then I played a bunch of years in Birmingham in the East Coast League. Of course, when you fought him, he would have been with the Indianapolis Ice right at the last couple of years of his career. I believe he's a firefighter out there now. But and I know he listens to the show, so I've got rumors that he listens to the show. Him and Kenny Boone are firefighters out in Indianapolis. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Good for them.
Yeah.
He hammered me with a good one. I think my buddy Marty Standish played with him in junior. And, I think I broke his nose in that fight. But yeah, he had me out on my feet. Don't remember the fight.
Did he come out of his gear on you? He was famous for that in the Western League. I know that. He'd always shit. He was like the Rock.
I think I broke his nose early in the fight, and maybe he was probably just like, all right, get. And something else I remember about the fight is that he jerked me down. It seemed like with the greatest of ease. Like when he decided the fight was over, he just pulled the front of my jersey and I went right down fast. That probably had something to do with me not remembering the fight.
Yeah. You didn't go down, but you were doing funny things standing up.
Yeah, I don't even know. To be honest, I didn't remember throwing any punches in the fight except for watching the video.
There you go. Yeah,
so I must have hung in there, huh? Just instinct kicked in and just hung in there.
Yeah, well, and like you said, and with Pop, I mean, like he did it for a long time in junior and in the pros there for 6 years. But yeah, big dude, tough guy. Yeah, he fought everybody in the Western League too. You have a real Western Hockey League flavor here to these names.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of those guys, just they're guys that you play with throughout your whole career, right? That the tough guys that are real tough, that are kind of on the same path you are, they make it to the same level, maybe a little bit higher, and you bump into each other along the way, and you're both still stuck in the same fucking job, so you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, there you go. Well, who we got? Number one, your number one pro fight.
My number one pro fight, the toughest guy I feel like I fought in pro, and gave it to me. I didn't even get a chance to get started. Gave it to me, got my jersey up, and was throwing uppercuts, chucking me around. I mean, you could just feel the raw power of the guy. I think I lucked out. I think he hit me in the helmet mostly, but you could just feel that he was chucking bombs. Marty Melnichuk.
The meat grinder. There you go. Yeah.
The meat grinder. Big boy. I think he was a second round pick by the Rangers or a seventh round pick by the Rangers. And, you know, of course I didn't know beforehand. At the time, Dobbin was actually playing in Oklahoma City with us. He had come down there on a 3-game tryout. And he told me before the game, he said, you know, don't just leave him alone. Let him sleep. He's an animal. He's a different kind of animal. And of course, you know, sometimes you just get curious.
Yep.
But, he caught me at the end of a shift, and I believe I was hustling on the back check, probably a rarity. I maybe should have threw that on the highlight reel. But I was hustling back on the back check, and puck stoppage by our goalie in front of our net. And I came in there. I think he was shoving some guys. I shoved him, and gloves were off, and he's chucking bombs. And, I mean, anybody that has ever seen Marty, he's not a small man. He's got a, I mean, back then he had to be 230 pounds, 6'2", and maybe 5% body fat. He was a very, very large, muscular individual.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I believe he still is.
Oh yeah, he still is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he, like I said, he would kind of had like that. You watch his fights; he's kind of got like a, I don't want to say like a Tony Twist vibe to him, but it's like, yeah, he's kind of got that jerky around and just, yeah, like you said, just straight bombs and there's no setup.
Super strong.
Yeah, like there's no setup punches. It's all just coming from the hip and, yeah. Well, it's interesting.
Yeah, he's trying to knock it.
Was there any, I guess this one would probably be one of them, but or maybe not, but was there ever a fight you'd kind of, not that you want back, but it was like, Is he the one guy that you're like, I would have wanted a rematch against him? Or no, was it just that bad?
You know, I had a chance to fight him in the playoffs. If it wasn't playoffs, I would have fought him again. Yeah. I would have liked to have fought him again and be a little bit more ready for that onslaught. But, yeah, I think, well, the guy that didn't make the list, but you talked about Ken Boone, I'd like to have a couple fights back with him. I might fight Booner tomorrow if I saw him. And I hear he's a great guy and a nice guy, but just to try to get back the couple, he kind of got the jump on me a little bit. Refs broke him up early. You know, one of those kind of things that I'd just like to get a few shots at him back. I'm kidding, obviously, but.
But yeah, but it's like that frustration. You just kind of, when you get going, the refs come in or whatever, and it's just like you never really,
yeah, didn't
you
get,
never
it,
got
it,
your
didn't
one
end the way
one
I wanted it to. But I definitely would have fought Marty again. I don't think I ever played him again in a regular season game, and it was the playoffs. When I did see him again. So I, you know, not much fighting going on in the playoffs and definitely don't want to give up the momentum on that night. That
no.
might not be the night to lose another one.
Yeah, exactly. Was there ever somebody you wanted to fight and you never got a chance to?
I'm trying to think. No, I think pretty much any guy I ever had a shot at. What was that guy? There was one guy in Dallas that I actually tried to fight him a few times, and he chicken shitted out. Then I ended up elbowing him in the back of the head at the end of the game, and then all hell broke loose. Ended up fighting a couple guys off the ice. Bad deal in Dallas. Bad deal down in Fort Worth. I can't remember the guy's name. Clark? Last name was Clark.
But Jason Clark?
Yeah, I think it was Jason Clark. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I only played him once or twice, though. But he was kind of a donkey running around, running everybody, you know, being a cheap shot, and wouldn't fight me. Chased him all over the ice, wouldn't fight me. And then I ended up elbowing him in the back of the head, cheap-shotting him, you know, obviously. That's what we do when we don't get what we want. We cheap-shot the guy.
Yeah.
So a cheap shot at him, elbowed him in the back of the head. And waylay ensued. I believe it was kind of a everybody dropped their gloves line brawl type of thing, and they got me off the ice. And two of the Brahma players were walking back to their dressing room, and they started talking shit. And then they came running up, and I fought those guys off the ice. And you know, just the good old days.
Just the good old days. Yeah, Jason Clark, I believe. I believe he is hockey's all-time penalty minute leader.
Come on.
Yeah. Oh, he played well. He had basically three 500 minute seasons. He played in Verdun. He had 517 minutes 1 year. Yeah. Well, the year you're talking about in Fort Worth, in 64 games, he had 330 minutes. Yeah, 337, 354, 467,
really?
491. Yeah. He played forever. He played from 93 to 2010. Yeah, he was in the Quebec League.
93.
Yeah. Yep.
Good grief.
Yeah, he was, I believe him and Bonvie, Bonvie's like the American League all-time penalty minute leader, but I'm pretty sure Jason Clark is minor league hockey's all-time penalty minute leader.
There you go.
Well, and there's a few guys I've had on this show that didn't have much good things to say about Jason Clark, so, yeah, you're not alone in your sentiment.
Well, there it is. If I could run one back and try to get somebody that I didn't get, that would be him.
There you go. Well, hey, man, well, that was a hell of a list. Yeah, double duty, junior and pro. And course, for everybody listening, I highly encourage you to go back and check out Marco's full-length interview where we cover his entire career, and we timeline it right from the Winnipeg days right to the end in Oklahoma. But I won't keep you too long because I know you're a busy dude, but I really appreciate you taking the time to come back on the show.
No problem, Darren. My pleasure, and it's always nice to walk down memory lane and think about some guys that that you haven't thought about in a long time. Hope all those guys are doing good for themselves, and great to see that your podcast is successful, and see all the guests that you have and everything that you're doing, man. It's awesome.
Well, I appreciate that, and thank you. You read that just like I wrote it, so it was much appreciated.
Right.
No, it's been a lot of fun to have you guys on and hearing your stories, and the feedback's been really good. And you were a very popular guest, so it'll be fun to have you. It's great to have you back on. I know the people will dig it. So, but I will let you go. But once again, thank you for coming on.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?